Hello everyone and welcome back to Mound Talk with Sioux City Explorers Manager Steve Montgomery. Mound Talk is a weekly program that gives you, the fans, the opportunity to ask the Sioux City Manager questions about the Explorers, baseball or sports in general, or just seek Steve's wisdom about life events that are going on. In this week's episode, we congratulate Steve on winning his 200th career game as a manager. He tells us how he got the nickname Mongo, and Steve answers some advice for a wife whose husband said something really insensitive. So let's get right to Mound Talk.
Well, we want to welcome back Manager Steve Montgomery. Steve, before we get into anything, I wanted to first of all say congratulations on your 200th win last week. That's pretty awesome.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, it's more of a team honor, you know. The players have come through and have enabled you to get to that point.
Well, that's a pretty big number to hit right off the bat in less than four seasons. So that's pretty impressive. Do you have team updates you'd like to provide for us?
We had two big losses this past weekend, and Dylan Kelly with a fractured thumb, and Nate Sampson with a fractured hand. Same exact injury that Tyler Ogle had, and hopefully he can come back on Friday of this week. And and we went out and we signed Daniel Jackson, a catcher first baseman out of Long Beach State University, came highly recommended by several organizations, and just trying to keep it all together.
Nate Sampson may be back this Friday?
No, Tyler Ogle.
Okay.
Ogle will be back this Friday. Tyler and Nate had the same exact hand injury.
Okay. Wow. I know Nate's injury was, could be a real crippler for a team, but how do you keep your team motivated when you have a loss to a guy who's not only a big performer, but such a clubhouse guy for you as well?
Well, I think you have to look yourself in the mirror and not try to do too much. No one's going to come and walk through these doors and be a Nate Sampson. There's really only one Nate Sampson, and, we all have to do just a little bit more. Not one guy picking up the entire slack. That's not going to happen. But we have to do it as a 23-man unit. And we have to pitch. We have to play defense. And when you're asked to get a bunt down, get it down and just play fundamentally sound baseball.
When you have so many injuries like this, is this a time that you lean on your pitching staff even more?
Yeah, you have to lean on them. When you're up in Canada, sometimes you don't get all of your pitching across the border. So, we've been playing shorthanded up here in Winnipeg, and, subsequently you're having to leave guys out there for longer stints because you don't have your full complement of people. I'm gonna call the league office. Maybe I'll call in sick today.
I wouldn't blame you for that. That Manitoba flu. A move I saw you made this last week was Rob Wirt was released by the team. He had been such a huge a part of your bullpen for so long. I know that had to be a really tough decision.
Yeah, it was. Rob got some devastating news this past week. He has a torn labrum. And it was misdiagnosed in February when he started feeling the pain. And then it's kind of just been some contributing factors where they thought it was this, they thought it was that. And subsequently, it was just misdiagnosed from the beginning. It was very hard. One of my harder releases. He's meant so much to this organization. He's meant so much to this team. He's meant so much to the coaching staff. I can't say enough good things about Rob Wirt. Took the ball every single day. And if you needed somebody, Rob Wirt was the guy, arguably, I think, the best reliever maybe ever that I've seen in independent ball. I know he wasn't a closer, but I always say closing is easier than setting up, because setting up, you come in second and third, one out, and, the tying runs at third base, and we're asking you to strike a guy out, where closers usually get that clean inning just to go. So I always like to put in a little bit of emphasis on my setup position. Rob took the ball, and I mean, our you know probably the two best teams in the history of independent ball maybe was us and St. Paul in 2015. And, you know, Rob pitched, I think, seven and some change innings in four games and was just magnificent. And, you know, we're not sitting here having the accolades and stuff that this organization has gotten without Rob Wirt.
Yeah, I always thought what was so impressive about him is that you could have brought him in the third inning or the ninth and he would just do the job for you.
That's it. And never what's lost in the shuffle is that never complain. He never once said, I'm not taking the ball. I mean, after he pitched the 4 1/3 innings in game one in 2015, Rob Wirt walked in and said, you know, that he would take the ball in game two if needed. And you're talking about a guy who just threw 50-some pitches and he wants the ball the next day. It's just truly amazing and, you know, sorely going to be missed. I hope he's unsure if he's going to play anymore. I just hope he, you know, whatever he does in life, I will definitely help him out and give him a good recommendation.
Before fan questions, I just want to ask one other thing about you. That nobody really has seemed to have gotten on a big hot streak in the Central now, and you guys are just, you know, all four teams are within like two games of one another. Despite all the injuries, I would think you have to feel really good about your chances at this time.
Yeah, we're missing a few pieces, I feel. You know, we can't get all of our personnel on the field. That's our biggest detriment right now. And, you know, I've said to you in previous shows, I think it's going to come down to schedule. You know, who's playing who and who get, you know, if someone can get hot and rattle off a 16-4 stretch, I think you'll see a little bit of separation. It just seems like with who we're playing, we're just beating up on one another and makes it difficult. So hopefully one of us can get hopefully someone can get hot and hopefully it's us. And, you know, Winnipeg's starting to play real well right now. So they're getting themselves in the wild card talks as well. And with the recent losing streak, you know, they've rattled off a couple and they've made the North a lot tighter.
Absolutely. Well, let's head to fan questions. We first of all begin with Denny from Hubbard. He says he would think that Nate loss puts a lot of pressure on the other hitters. How do you keep them relaxed so that they don't put too much pressure on themselves?
Definitely. I think you've seen them putting extra pressure on themselves. We just try to tell them to relax and do it as a group and not just do it as an individual. You know, you stress that, you try to say that, and, you know, you try to go out and execute a game plan, but you can definitely see people putting extra stress on themselves, and we're a little bit out of position, too. We haven't been able to play with one another enough to kind of learn each other's tendencies and stuff, especially on the defensive side of the ball. That's where it's lost, is that Nate plays shortstop as well. We brought in a good one, the former Saint, Tanner Vavra, who's done an adequate job at shortstop. It's just learning, you know, he needs to learn, you know, how Benny plays second base and how much range the third baseman has, where to play guys with our pitching staff and stuff. That's what's lost in the shuffle.
We have a couple of questions from Dave from Burbank. The first one of them is, I know a lot of managers like some time to assess their team. You were at the halfway point in the season. What are your thoughts on your team now?
Really overachieving at this point. We haven't been able to stay healthy. We haven't had our full complement of people. We've had two people all year that haven't missed games, position player-wise. And when you think about that, you've missed Tony Campana. You've missed Michael Lang. Samson's out for an extended period. Dylan Kelly's been out. Josh Bitters has missed time. John Nagowski gets picked up. It's just Nick Flair, our original second baseman, out for the year. It's just crazy. But you just try to keep it together and move forward.
Dave would also like to know, is there anyone whose play has far exceeded your expectations?
I tell you, who was, until they got hurt, was a young man coming from the Frontier League in Dylan Kelly. You know, he for the first, 20, 30 games maybe, he was hitting 188, and when he just got hurt in Kansas City, he had raised his average all the way up to 304. I think he was on, like, over his last 48 at-bats, he was hitting over 500. So he raised his average 112 points, and being a true rookie hitting 304 in this league, it really exceeded my expectations.
Brian from South Sioux City would like to know who gave you the name Mongo.
Well, my last name, Montgomery, obviously, and everyone in high school and around my town called me Monty. And when my first couple years in pro ball, all in organizations, I was known as Monty, and everybody called me Monty and everything. And I went to Venezuela, and, you know, they have a hard time pronouncing their Y's, so they just started calling me Mongo. Well, when I walked into the Fargo clubhouse, Nelson Cano was on my team in Venezuela, and he just so happened to be in that Fargo clubhouse. And when he saw me, he said Mongo, and it just stuck. So since 2001, you know, I've been called Mongo.
Interesting. Lisa from Rookdale would like to know, are there teams that you enjoy defeating more as a manager?
The one in the other dugout.
Doesn't matter who it is.
You know, it's just equal. I think the players get a little more ramped up to beat certain teams, but as a coaching staff, you just try to beat the team in the opposite dugout. Obviously, when you get you're looking at the standings and stuff, it's always sweeter when you're chasing somebody to beat them. So there's a little more pressure on yourselves. But, you know, just if you were starting the season, there's no one, you know, it's just a team in the opposite dugout.
Coach Tom would like to know, what is your rule for playing the infield in?
I think it's just a feel thing. When you get that feeling, a lot of times what I'll do is that, you know, say we're down two runs with second and third, one out, and we're in the fourth or fifth inning, middle part of the innings. What I'll do is I'll wait till they get two strikes. I'll give up the run until two strikes, and then I might play in so I don't just give up the cheap run. And also, it makes the hitter's mentality change at that point. But really, it's a feel thing. Obviously, if you're down runs, you got to play the infield in. But a lot of times what happens is that you play the infield in, next thing you know, you got a base hit. Let's say now you got first and third left-handed hitter. What's lost in that shuffle? Now the first baseman has to hold him on. So now the whole right side of the infield's open. So you got to look on deck and you got to look ahead. Who to attack, who not to attack, who you're intentionally walking, stuff like that in order to have success playing the infield in. Because when you're playing the infield in, there's a lot of holes and you give up the bleeder that just loops over the infield's head.
Interesting. Pam from St. Paul has a couple of questions for you. She'd first of all like to know, what are your thoughts on guys who use steroids getting into the Hall of Fame?
I think that there's, you know, obviously they've cheated the game, but there has to be a separate wing. I think they all should get into the Hall of Fame, but if you don't want to put them in for safe because they use steroids, the numbers indicate that they should be in. Put them in a separate hall. Put them in a wing that was known as the steroid era. And, you know, fans can walk through and see what the non-steroid era did and then bang what the steroidal era did. I think there was – it's hard to say, but – because I wasn't around back then, but I think there was always something going on that, you know, maybe in the 50s, the 60s, not steroids, but something to get you prepared for the game. The guys in the 50s and, you know, the 40s, 50s, they rode trains.
Yeah.
And you got to think, I mean, we ride buses and stuff. I mean, trains had to be almost worse because they went all over the place. There was probably things going on that the average fan doesn't know about. Yes, they weren't performance enhancing to hit homers and stuff, but maybe it got maybe like a caffeine pill or something like that, you know, guys got a hold of. But they should let him in. Just make it a separate wing and call it the steroid era and let him in the Hall of Fame.
That's an interesting discussion. Excellent. Pam would also like to know, do you think that the steroid era ruined stolen bases? It seems that no one uses them anymore.
Yeah, it has. He definitely, you don't see the fast guys anymore. You really don't even see a two-strike approach. Everyone's just trying to hit the ball out of the yard. Everyone plays for a three-run homer. And you don't really see the fast guys getting really much of an opportunity. You see more of the fast guys playing center field or being a pinch runner or stuff like that. But definitely, you know, the supplements and the weight training and everything has leaned the game more so on power.
Bill from Sergeant Bluff would like to know, who do you see as having the better chance of winning it all, the Astros or the Dodgers?
I like the Dodgers' chances a little bit more than the Astros. I think the Dodgers have a true number one in Clayton Kershaw. Even though he struggles in the postseason, the rotation's so deep. The Astros, I think, are a little more explosive offensively. I think it also is going to come down to, I always feel the American League has an advantage in the World Series because they have the built-in DH in their lineup. You know, they have that one big hitter that doesn't, and you don't see that on a National League team. So I always give the advantage to the American League when it comes down to it, but I do like the Dodgers' chances, especially if Clayton can, you know, shrug off his recent and postseason struggles.
Henry from Jackson would like to know, why is it that some pitchers have a really great season, then the next year they are mediocre, then they turn it right back around?
It's amazing how many guys have their good season in the contract years. But, you know, I mean, it's not complacency. Absolutely not. I think it's just, you know, some guys, if the ball bounces your way, in certain situations, it really saves your season. You know, if you get out of, you know, let's just say over the course of 162 games, you get out of seven bases loaded jams with two outs, you know, you think about the amount of runs you save, or a bleeder just falls in. Now you're talking about two runs scoring, so you're talking 14 runs that you've just given up. That's a huge number when it comes down to it in your ERA, but scouting reports a little bit. I think hitters seeing the pitcher more gives the advantage to the hitter as well, to kind of understand their stuff and what they're trying to do to get you out.
Byron from Sioux City would like to ask, he says, hearing you are a big basketball fan, he's excited that he can ask you NBA questions, so he'd like to know where you rate the Golden State Warriors team in terms of all-time greats.
That's hard to say. I still think the Bulls, you know, when they had Rodman and Pippen and all them guys, and actually Kerr was on the team, the coach of the Warriors, I think that they just would have a little bit of an advantage. The game has changed from the 90s till now. You know, if Steph Curry would have come through the lane against Detroit back in the day, Steph Curry would probably be on the three-week disabled list because he would have got a forearm shiver straight to the chest. So the times have definitely changed. You can't even touch a guy. In fact, you can't even breathe on him hard without getting called for a foul. So times have changed. I just like the toughness that the Bulls team showed. And the thing lost in the shuffle there, they didn't give days off to, you know, when they played back-to-back-to-back days, there wasn't a day off for a superstar. Michael Jordan played every game. So I just like the mental toughness of the Bulls a little bit more.
We pull out the couch for Steve to answer a couple of relationship questions. So we first of all begin with Deanna asking, why are men such pigs?
I think it's in our DNA sometimes. But, you know, I don't think all men are pigs. I think all men are pigs at times, definitely. I think it's just kind of in our DNA a little bit. But, you know, you try to be as nice as you can and be polite and respectful. And we try to teach our kids that as well. It's just sometimes men say what's on their mind probably a little bit too much.
Which is, we have a question about that coming up. Carl from Sioux City says, My wife and I were talking about this a few days ago, and now that you have this show, I am curious what you think. If you could instill a few ideas into your children, what would be the most important things you would want them to know?
Respect. Respect and making the right decisions. Obviously, we want to teach our kids to respect people, to respect others' space, and to treat others like you want to be treated. And, you know, if we could all install that in our kids, it would be great. You sometimes see kids treat other people, and my kids are guilty of this too, they treat other people with great respect, with great behavior and stuff, and then they try to walk all over their parents. So if we could just teach them to have respect and treat others like they want to be treated, it'd be a lot better world.
Our last question comes from a person identifying herself as wife who wants to know. She says, my husband got upset at something at work, and when I tried to talk to him about it, he told me to get my fat butt, I'll say, away from him. Since then, he has profusely apologized for his words and told me that he would do anything he could to make it up to me. I would not be wrong to milk this, would I?
I'd milk it a little bit, you know. But, you know, sometimes, like I just said, sometimes we say things that are just on our mind that are just come out. He probably didn't mean it harshly at all. He just meant that, you know, he needed some time to think it over and to blow some steam off. And you just so happened to be the person he, you know, blew the steam off on. But, yeah, I'd milk it a little bit. You know, sometimes my wife milks it. Sometimes when I say things I shouldn't say. So I don't think you're in the wrong to milk it a little bit. But, you know, once you're done milking it, you tell him that, you know, you love him and that you milked it a little bit too long, and then you get a good chuckle out of it.
Awesome advice, Steve. Thanks for joining us this week.
All right, thanks for having me.
We want to thank Manager Steve Montgomery for joining us on Mound Talk this week. If you have your own questions you'd like to ask the Sioux City Explorers manager, please send them to us at asksteve@minorleaguesportsreport.com. That's asksteve@minorleaguesportsreport.com. Please have your questions to us by Wednesday evening so we can give Steve a little time to review them before we record the show. I'm Rob Pannier, the managing editor of the Minor League Sports Report, and we'll see you next time on Mound Talk.